This is Art Hobie. On March 1st, 2005, and I'm here at the Research Park with Ed Hopkins, and we're going to be talking about his role in helping plan and implement the early developments of the Research Park and continuing through his career until his retirement. So let's begin, Ed, by just having you give us an overview of your own background and how you got here to the university and what your initial responsibilities were and how you then gravitated towards being one of the team members in the development of the University Research Park.
All right. Well, I came to the university in 1964 as the campus planner for the Department of Planning and Construction. I had previously been doing similar work at the University of Illinois, and Jim Ansel, who you may remember, came up here and said if I ever was interested in coming to migrating to Wisconsin, to let him know. And I did.
Are you from Illinois originally?
I was born and raised in Michigan.
Oh, okay.
And my family moved to the University of Illinois. Was the campus of my father and mother.
Oh.
And we and the home of my mother. And we moved back there in the late 40s, and I finished high school there, and then subsequently went to the University of Illinois and got both an undergraduate degree in landscape architecture and a graduate degree in urban planning. So that's what I brought to Wisconsin in 1964.
Great.
Which we always thought was a brilliant move on our part.
The university is reserving judgment, though.
Well, that's probably true. I guess it was about 1981 when various people began to conceive of this property out here being used in the manner that it has been.
And previous to that, in the department as a campus planner, what were some of the things that you were?
Well, you know, we were doing master planning and we were doing area planning, and I think by the early 80s things had gotten to the point where there was less expansion and less site development, and it was the reutilization of existing facilities.
Has that activity evolved out of the 1959 plan that was put forward, or were there
subsequent plans? There were subsequent plans. I probably did a couple that were...
These were in-house?
Well, they were in-house. They were done with, for instance, the Campus Planning Committee.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they were ever published in real hard form, but they were our sort of evolved guide to what we thought we were doing. So in 81, this idea occurred, and I was suited, some people thought, to give some leadership to what we might do with this piece of property out here. And I was very glad to do that.
Did you then shift completely to working on this project, or were you sort of balancing your
I was probably balancing for a while.
Yeah.
And at one point in time, when we were still in the early days here, I took responsibility for the development of University Ridge, the golf course.
Oh.
And did that simultaneously with what we were doing out here.
You had a personal interest in the golf course?
I had a personal interest in the golf course, yes. So I didn't consider it to be terribly hard work.
Labor of love.
It was a labor of love, yes, right. So we got going and developed a certain amount of plans and relationships with faculty groups and one thing another. And by, as I recall, 1984, we were at the place where we were beginning to develop develop infrastructure, roads and utilities, and a certain amount of lots. And I think our first building, which was the Warzine Engineering, I'm not quite up to speed on who's in there now, but
yeah.
I think it's Bone Care International, maybe some others.
Now, have the local issues been pretty much resolved? Were you working in any way with interfacing with the city and the neighborhoods and so
forth? That was a big part of the work there in the early 80s.
Yeah, how did you handle that in terms of explaining to people what was going to be done and allaying their fears that this was going to be a big encroachment?
Well, actually, what we were proposing was of much more comfort, particularly to the adjacent neighborhood, than what they had sort of visualized or thought they had heard about the property. And we were also very generous in terms of creating a buffer between the neighborhood and the park. There's a 100-foot strip there on the east side that helps separate the two. And so we found really, but we did work, Wayne McGowan and myself both worked extensively with the local neighborhoods and local committees, et cetera, to overcome some of those fears.
That buffer strip is just undeveloped, is that it?
Well, it's landscaped.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, but it's prohibited by deed restriction from being developed for any of the facilities within the park.
Yeah. And that's just on east perimeter, is that correct?
Exactly.
Of the existing
it
property.
Runs from Tokay to Mineral Point.
Uh-huh.
And is a 100-foot strip set aside, and which we landscaped fairly extensively.
Landscaped in the sense of vegetation that would grow up and shield the backyards of the neighbors?
Yeah, right. Attempt both through earthworks and landscaping to give some separation between the residential neighborhood, which backed up on the park.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And I think that was always very much appreciated by the neighborhood.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Because that was a neighborhood that was fairly conscious of the size of the lots and the quality of the homes, and it was developed a short time before the park was.
Well, it had actually been in place for a considerable period of time. In fact, when we first came to Madison, we lived in a home.
Oh, you did.
That didn't back right up on the park, but was within
was in that neighborhood.
In that neighborhood,
yeah.
Right,
okay.
Right. So I had some sense of both the people and their concerns, and.
So were there hearings or informal meetings?
My recollection is that, yes, we had to go through a total city process, which included a number of hearings. But I think that we made an effort to meet individually and as in a group with that neighborhood there to overcome their concerns.
So then you move forward once those political niceties have been taken care of, and then you feel somewhat unconstrained in terms of what you can do next. Is that fair to say?
Well, that's true. During that period also there was a new, an additional segment of the local zoning ordinance that was written particularly for research parks and what they call research parks and specialized manufacturing.
Yes.
And so that was an open process and one that we involved ourselves in.
Now, was that specifically designed for this project, or was there development in other areas that would be governed by that
I think that
zoning?
Both. I think that...
Because we have the Sauk Trails. And
the Sauk Trails thing was coming online about the same
time,
and I think there was some concern that this was going to be something that the zoning ordinance really had no provision for, that it was going to be either too restrictive or too permissive.
And then there was the Wisconsin for Research organization that had been put together, which was they were thinking of a research park, but I don't think they ever really developed one, did they?
Not to my knowledge,
yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
So that would have covered their...
Yes, right, too. Right.
So at the time, besides the university's project, the other one would be the Sauk Trails.
Sauk Trails and the university came online,
yeah,
relatively at the same point in time.
Okay.
And I think there was felt to be some competitive urges between the two.
Okay. Well, once you then get these clearances and start to go ahead, how did you look at the landscape in terms of what should be developed, where, when, and how?
Well, in part we looked at it by where could we develop with the least amount of dollar involvement.
Right, yeah.
University Research Park started out having...
With zero budget.
With zero budget,
yeah.
Exactly, right. So what we did was we began to run in from Mineral Point on what is now known as Science Drive,
yeah,
a relatively short distance, and that was the first development. And then it was extended as the park became wealthier, had more income to dispose on infrastructure,
now
and
the,
as we needed it.
The city had agreed to build the streets, is that correct?
Well, they were built under their standards. They did not build them at their cost.
So those
streets were built at our cost.
At your cost,
yes.
But the city would then maintain the streets?
Yes, in the same way, right. They then accepted those were dedicated to the city and became public streets. It would be,
and utilities similarly?
Absolutely.
Developed?
Right.
No, they pay for them and then they maintain them.
Right, right. The same set of relationships that any developer would enter into with the city if we were going to develop something. So there was quite a bit of scrutiny in the beginning about what we were going to do.
So obviously you wanted to get something located as close to Mineral Point as possible.
Correct.
To work your way into the site. Now at that time, was it a sort of, well, let's see how far we can get into the area, or did you have some designs as to how you would develop, basically it was the Reeder Farm at that time, is that correct?
Right, we had some designs in general terms of what we wanted, the configuration of the whole. I think there was 125 acres on the Reeder side and something like 225 here, so 350 plus or minus. So we had some notion about how the whole thing ought to go over a period of time. We didn't quite know what the stages were going to be.
Now there were some areas in the initial development that had to be respected, is that correct? Wasn't there an issue over the beehives among other things? And then there were some...
The university had a bee farm in that area of evergreen trees, which has subsequently been blown over by our tornado.
Oh, okay. Just recent, this past year.
Yeah, this past year.
Yeah. Yes,
exactly.
Okay.
And there were some bees in there, and we had no desire to go in there really and do anything in that area.
Yeah.
I think we perhaps ran a road through to what is now Ultratech, but the bees were phased out in relatively short order, as I recall.
But there were all those little bitty sensitivities that you had to worry about.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Not only the neighborhood, but our own faculty and staff.
Yes, and I recall being visited out there in the field by staff members from sports medicine who were going to be very concerned about what the views out across the
field. Oh yeah?
And the retention of certain of that area that we just talked about where the bees were,
mm-hmm,
and then there was an evergreen stand that still exists there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I pedaled my bicycle up there in sports medicine, I recognized how right they were and how right we were to retain both of those little stands. And I anticipated some resistance on the part of somebody, you know, leaving that stuff, but there wasn't any.
Mm-hmm.
Our research park board was very sensitive, I think.
So, in the early stages and continuing, it seemed that you had developed rather effective means of communication in terms of the progressive steps you had to take and who you needed to consult with and get the acquiescence legally as well as programmatically. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, and I think it's fair to say that there was a good deal of acceptance and support on the part of City Hall, at a variety of levels.
Yeah.
And we worked effectively, particularly with various staff from the planning department, who, for instance, had to write a whole new zoning section for this kind of use, which we were part and party of their doing that.
But there was
good acceptance on the part of the City of Madison. I think they recognized that there were real advantages to utilizing these properties in this way.
Mm-hmm. And did you work with your counterparts in the city? Who would you have worked with?
I think when we started that Chuck Knauer was the director of planning. He was subsequently replaced by George Austin.
Yes.
And there were various other staff members that we worked closely with.
And George went on to lead the development of the Overture Center.
That's right. That's
very
right.
Important
right.
Madison facility at
right.
this point. And so your relationships with the people downtown were cordial and
effective. They were remarkably cordial, I thought. Yeah. There was a lot of support.
Did you feel the press at all was trying to look for controversy or anything in the early stages? Or?
Others may have felt that. I'm not sure that I did.
Okay.
You know, I was involved with the nitty-gritty of getting the thing in the ground, and those weren't because of some of the things I've just explained, those weren't the issues that were before us. They were perhaps larger scale issues.
As a landscape architect in that initial development, how did you look at the land there, and how did you figure things should go here or there or what have you? Were there any natural features that you felt we just alluded to?
There's the bee farm and that other stand of trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we also recognized the city mandated that we do a considerable amount of work in terms of stormwater control.
Yes.
And so what you see, and I think, you know, there's been the question of density.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons that there is that question is this is not the most dense development. On the other hand, stormwater detention was a mandate from the City of Madison. And we, that is very viewable from, for instance, the Whitney Way, which bisects the park. And you see right into that and over that to the buildings.
So explain basically what that involved. Was you wanted to avoid a wholesale runoff, which would then clog the storm sewers and things like that.
Right, so right. So you're holding it back and then releasing it. We probably did a better job in that area than most development in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
The engineering involving that is to hold a certain amount of water and then let it go to wherever it's going to go downstream. We came upon the idea of utilizing native vegetation, very much many of the plant species that one would find in a, in a natural prairie, and putting those in our detention areas. Those are so much deeper rooted than many species that what they do is they allow 2.5 times as much water to be to repenetrate and be left in the soil rather than running off.
So they use it for their own nourishment.
Exactly. And because the soil is loosened by these very deep-seated roots.
Now, because this was an agricultural property, had a great deal of the existing area been cultivated over the years?
Yeah, I think probably most of it has.
So you would have to go in and introduce these plants.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have in the Reeder Farm and the Charmany Farm, I think we have something like 20 acres that have this introduction of native plant material.
But was this based on the kind of plant families that one would have found here?
Many years ago.
Before?
Yeah, right.
Much of this area was developed, so these are natural prairie plants?
Absolutely.
Similar to what we find in the arboretum?
Yes, right, right.
And so if one looks today over the expanse of the current park, you do see a lot of prairie.
Yes.
Which is really the native ecology of the area, is that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, all this stuff that you're seeing out here is essentially that, dominated by that kind of species.
Did you have any help from university departments of botany, for example, or landscape architecture, for that matter, in working on what?
The germ of this idea came from a very good friend and professional colleague of mine by the name of Jim Padgett, who was at one time with Johnson, Johnson & Roy out of Ann Arbor, a very leading landscape firm, and ultimately set up his own consulting firm in Northern Illinois.
And you want to spell his last name?
P-A-T-C-H-E-T-T.
P-A-T-C-H-E-T-T.
And he was very busy, interesting firms in the Chicago area, and because I was using him up here ourselves in doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a major contribution of what at that point in time was a relatively new technique.
Mm-hmm.
To some of the real prairie purists, it probably isn't as pure as what they might like or they would have in the arboretum.
Yeah. Right.
But on the other hand, it's a very practical application, and unless you're going to be really pure about it, it's quite legitimate.
So we had those areas more or less delineated on your initial plan, and then the other concern was the progressive development of the lots. Now, did you have any size for each lot that would be
there was a platting mechanism,
yeah,
which set up where the roads were going to be and where the lots were going to be and their size. That was one of the mysteries that we had at that point in time, because being having never really marketed to firms like we were going,
yeah,
to try to attract, we did not know what the range of sizes was going to be. So we took some fairly educated guesses, and I think most of our lots were in the 3 to 5 acre size. Some of them, for instance, people have talked about density. Well, I look at the first building that was built in the park, and they bought extra property for their expansion, which they have never realized.
Mm-hmm.
But
in other words, they bought a lot next to their initial
one? They bought a whole lot and developed part of it with the idea that they would expand then on the remaining portion.
Oh, I see.
And we've had other people do that. We got along okay in terms of the sizing to land.
Yeah.
But there weren't any very rigid rules about how that was going to work out. Probably never would be under any set of circumstances.
Well, part of the problem I would guess is that the firms didn't know what size building they needed.
That's
either.
True.
So
that's
they,
true.
They had to start out with probably a modest.
Right. Right.
Expectation in terms of what they were going to be doing.
Right.
So.
The Science Center, I think, is a fine example of that.
Mm-hmm.
The little complex of 12 or 13 buildings,
yeah,
off of Science Drive. You know, the park invested in that.
Right.
We're doing okay on the machine? Yeah. And those are 10,000 square foot buildings,
mm-hmm,
because we had no idea what our leasing potential was. Well, we kept simulating those, but they were relatively small, and I suspect if we do it again, you would find that we would do somewhat larger buildings.
Yeah, well, how about height restrictions? Was there any?
There were some height restrictions. I'm not quite clear on what they were, but I've forgotten that, but there were some height restrictions in,
mm-hmm,
terms of, but certainly that area over there.
Because if you, from a present perspective, perspective, look at the profile of the buildings throughout the park. It's very modest. They do not loom over you.
Right.
There is that taller building at the Mineral Point Road, Whitney Way.
Yes, right.
But that's down below the slope of the hill, so it doesn't loom over you
yes,
in the way.
Yes, right. Right.
Some of these other.
That developer wanted to do those in the middle of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And surround them with parking.
Oh, okay.
He was out of Chicago.
Yes.
When we didn't permit that
right.
to be done because that wasn't the face of the park that we wanted to present to the Madison
so
public.
You cited the building where that's the first thing you see as you drive
right.
by
right.
from either direction.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we also realized that we weren't necessarily going to get terribly distinguished architecture all the time.
Right.
That there was an economic basis for putting these things up.
Yeah.
And that
it's what I used to call cost per square foot consideration.
Right.
Is that deep.
Right. And that somehow a little space and a little landscaping were our solution to the fact that we were going to get some good and some not quite so good architecture.
Okay, so Warzine becomes your first client, the first building. Then let's talk about how things progress after that in terms of the siting of the buildings and how you move forward from there.
Well, my recollection was we extended Science Drive southward, probably in two or three stages to capture sites for various buildings that were coming online. And ultimately hooked up then with
Whitney
Way, yeah, on the west of the property.
So, in planning the roads, the Reeder Farm is being developed, and the Charmony Farm is sitting here with nothing developed.
Right,
but. Obviously, as you begin to move beyond the Reeder Farm, you're going to need roads on the Charmony Farm. Did you wait for delineating those till you had pretty much achieved maturity on the Reeder Farm?
No, I think what we did was in the beginning, we incorporated both properties in terms of kind of an overall master plan.
Uh-huh.
So that we knew when we got to that point, we're ready to enter the Charmony Farm.
Okay.
Pretty much where that was going to
yeah.
go. The road plan was sort of set in the beginning for the two properties. The only change that I can recall was there was at one time a connection just east of Sports Medicine that was going to go into Tokay. And the neighborhood beyond that
yeah.
got very concerned
yes.
about what the impact of that was going to be on their residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that was not developed.
Yeah, okay. So that's the boulevards. It would have been crossing the boulevard, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, right,
yeah.
right.
So
and would allow traffic to come through the residential neighborhood to gain access. It would have perhaps encouraged that, and certainly traffic coming out of the park
right.
would have been back in the residential
yeah.
neighborhood. So we were glad to give that up. That wasn't
a big issue.
No, that was not a big issue.
Okay. Now, in the early conception, the plan for the park provided for research and light small manufacturing, I guess they call it.
Yeah, specialized manufacturing.
Specialized.
Right.
In addition to hotel and conference center,
yep.
plus some possible commercial development, that sort of drops by the wayside as you go along, doesn't it?
Yeah, as I recall in the beginning, there was maybe an area over there near the intersection of Whitney Way and Science Drive that could have been developed more intensively with commercial development.
Yeah.
But there never seemed to be a market that presented itself that was particularly interested in that.
some of those other uses didn't become major considerations for you as you were laying out the plan.
They didn't seem to have a great deal of marketability.
Mm-hmm. So developers would look at it and they would say, well, we're really not interested. And I think at the time, one begins to see that things are moving elsewhere, that the movement of the city is rapidly going further west.
Yes.
And
right.
And so West Town and the surrounding area there become a major hub of activity. It was one time I was joint members of the West Side Swim Club, we'd sit there and talk at poolside and say, well, hell, the city's never going to cross the belt line west from there. And they were almost there and gone by that time. But we can both remember when even this Odana Road corridor was still relatively undeveloped.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, that links up quite rapidly with the West Town, and then the West Side Business Club, which had been adjacent to the pool, moves across the belt line and signals that, hey, things are changing quite rapidly. So developers looking at these other applications would say, well, it's interesting, but not really lucrative from our standpoint.
Right. And I'm not sure that it's a great detriment to the park.
No.
It seems to me that one thing that the park maybe lacks is a place where people might go and eat lunch together.
Yeah, kind of commons.
Yeah, a kind of commons place where there could be a little bit more exchange and interchange. Whether that's practical or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's it's kind of too bad. Everybody comes to their space and exists in it and goes home.
Yeah, that's interesting. There is no sort of downtown, if
you will,
here.
Right.
That there's not a place where people in the park, and there are thousands of them now. Currently, we talk about 4,000 people employed here.
Right.
But there is no place where the park has its meeting place. So people here have to go elsewhere, and it's quite a distance usually from here.
Right.
So, okay, you experience a growing infill, to use the horrible word, of the Reeder Farm. Now, you're doing this on a gradual, progressive basis.
Right.
At one point, though, you reach this sort of stagnant era where not much is happening. Is that correct? What period is that? But people look around and say, well, where is everybody?
Yeah, there? Right. I'm not sure that I can give you a date for that.
Yeah. But it was a reality.
I was probably still busy.
Yes, yeah. Now, you are exclusively at this point working on University Research Park activity.
Yeah, by about 1984.
Okay.
With the exception of the golf course.
Yeah.
Which was probably 88, 89, something like that.
Okay.
I was working exclusively on Research Park.
And
I was reporting to Wayne McGowan.
Yeah, and you and Wayne were in the Wharf Building.
We were in the Wharf Building, right.
Okay.
And I must say about Wayne, he's one of the finest men I have ever worked for.
Well, we all know that, and I felt it was important to make sure that Wayne's contributions to both the state and the university were properly recognized, and so I did about 20 hours of tape on
good.
Him. So we've
good.
Got him down
yeah,
pretty well.
Right.
Now, Wayne is an extraordinary guy, and certainly you can look around and say that a lot of this wouldn't be here in the form that it is were it not for Wayne and for you and a lot of other hardworking people. So this is something you had fun doing.
I had fun doing this.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, by the time I got to this, if I came to the university in 64 and they started this in 81, I'd had about as much as a human being should take of the terrible interplay between the university's bureaucracy and the state's bureaucracy.
Right.
One shouldn't subject themselves to that for any longer period of time.
Yeah, that's like a perpetual arm wrestle.
Exactly, right. So I enjoyed this greatly.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne was the kind of guy that expected you to perform, but he gave you a great deal of rope and support when you needed it, and I appreciated that. And because we were minting our own money and utilizing our own money, we could make what I thought were the best informed choices about consultants and people to work with.
You want to talk about one of the real environmental challenges, specifically the tower?
The tower. Well, I think while I was doing other things, Wayne was doing that.
He was doing the tower.
And I was delighted that he was, because I watched that from aside. But he utilized many hours and many cells of...
Yeah, we've got that story pretty well outlined,
right.
But I wondered if you had any involvement or special...
Well, I just recognized that it was a tremendous, it was going to be a real restriction and limitation on the development of the park, because rightly so, there were various kinds of things embedded in state law about what you could and could not, and most of what was could not do within the height of the tower.
Right.
And that would have been a real tragedy for the park.
So were you reaching a point where the Reeder Farm was pretty mature, and now you really had to move across Whitney Way and start developing Charmony Farm.
Correct.
And, but you couldn't do that in a realistic sense.
Until we got rid of the tower.
Until you got rid of the tower.
Right.
So the tower issue gets resolved. And then how do you move next to decide what goes where? Is this a, we're sitting here actually in the Innovation Center, that's what we call it, right?
Right.
And looking out to the south and east, and there's still a great deal of open land here.
Yes, there is.
It's prairie in its nature.
Right.
Do you foresee any further siting of the building?
Well, there's at least one major site, and it could be divided into two, up there at the corner of Whitney Way and Tokay, and I think there's been a couple of abortive efforts about developing that, but that's certainly going to develop. Mr. Engleby chose that site largely because of its height and prominence over there beyond.
This is the building of, what's in that building?
That's part of Ultratech's.
Ultratech, okay.
Right.
That's what it's
that's,
called.
Yeah. Major facilities.
And then there is the...
and the rest of the stuff along here, I think located because it was in proximity, again, to a storm detention area.
Yeah, okay.
That sort
runs
of...
runs through the area here.
Right.
And then there is the Mass Metro Transfer Point.
Yes.
That Tokay, be the northwest corner of the Tokay Whitney Way intersection there. Now, did the city anticipate using that site? I know they had considered others for a transfer point. Hilldale was one area, the Hill Farms.
Okay, okay.
But that's an example of cooperation between the city and the
university.
It certainly is.
And as I recall, I was one of the larger proponents for them utilizing that because I felt it tied the park in with the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
They also had a design for their shelters there, which I wasn't very favorable to, And we talked them into doing this sort of barrel vaulted thing.
Yeah.
Which interestingly enough, I noticed that at some of their other shelters around town, they have utilized.
Yeah.
And I see nothing but a positive in terms of that utilization of the park.
So the potential remaining development here would be right near that transfer point.
Yeah, right, between here and the transfer point and up to the corner of Whitney Way, right. There's a major lot in there. And then the stuff, I think there may be one lot over here, one, maybe several lots over here, which are in the park's hands.
Yeah, those are close to...
They're sort of downstream, downhill from where Kuna.
Yeah.
The trade with Kuna was originally something like 52 acres.
Yeah.
And that's frankly what financed the research park.
Right. The initial...
And, you know, I sort of cringe as I go by and see that and wish we had it. But when you think back about it, there wouldn't probably be a research park unless we had
it. Is that property restricted in the same way if Kuna decides to move across Mineral Point Road and develop that area, they're bound by the same restrictions?
They're bound by the same restrictions and will have to come to the design review board for approval.
Let's say if they sell a property to someone else, do they have the freedom to sell it to some outside interest, or do they have to sell it back to the research park?
Good question. I'm not sure that I recall that. But whoever develops that...
Is bound by the zoning ordinance,
right,
is that correct?
Right, yes.
Okay.
The zoning ordinance and the deed restrictions, which the park set up for both of these pieces of property.
Yeah.
And which are in some instances more restrictive than the zoning ordinance.
Yeah, okay. So the...
And which are administered by the design review board. Which I'm shocked to find that I am now in my 21st year of service.
Is that right?
Yes, right.
Well, the way the board's been in the news lately, you may be soon replaced. There's a lot of controversy, isn't there, about the design review board and...
Our design review board?
Oh, this is the park design.
This is the park's design review board.
I thought
right.
There was a larger, was it Dane County Regional?
Oh, yes, right, right. No, that's entirely separate,
okay.
Right.
So you have your own design...
We have our own design review board, and each one of these properties is restricted in certain ways by deed restrictions,
okay,
which we placed on and which are a part of the park's agreement with whoever leases the land.
Now, refresh my memory on that design review board. You have certain constituencies represented, is that correct?
Well, when I wrote this, I decided that it needed to be, rather than a citizenry board, it needed to be professionalized as much as possible. And so it's a 5-member board, 4 of which must be design professionals. Either.
From outside?
Doesn't make any difference, just as long as they're design professionals.
Well,
architects, landscape architects, planners, urban designers.
Okay.
Bob Rennebaum, and actually that board grew out of the board that had done Hilldale for such a long period of time. And Bob Rennebaum was the remaining member at the time. And so until his retirement, he chaired that board and was the citizen member. He's since been replaced with one citizen member.
Okay.
And we've recently replaced Reinie Postweiler with an architectural member. But the idea within the deed restrictions is to keep that somewhat professionalized.
Yeah.
And you know, what you do is you don't get anybody to do Taj Mahal architecture.
Yeah.
But you rule out any real abuses and hopefully can encourage in some instances a little higher level of quality.
Well, let's speak to the architecture in that regard, really, because the very nature of the concept of the research park is one of coming in here and seeing if you can get something going and then conceivably moving on to another location.
Yes, right.
As you expand and as things take hold. So any kind of permanency from a design standpoint takes a secondary concern to utility. Utility in the sense we need a space where we can do this and that.
Yep.
And obviously we don't want any blot on the landscape, but we want something. Is this what the design review board?
Well, I always thought it was notable that the Regents, when they mandated this thing, said that it ought to be done in a park-like manner.
Yeah.
And I think that was, besides being sensitive to the surrounding neighborhoods and the demands for storm detention, et cetera, I think that's one of the reasons that it looks like it looks.
Yeah.
And I think we were always very well served by having hired Johnson, Johnson & Roy out of Ann Arbor, which was probably at that point in time the Midwest's best landscape architectural firm, to come and do a master landscape plan. And many of the plantings which you now see, which are reaching relatively mature sizes, were as a result of that effort on their part.
So that plan more or less articulated where the natural areas were going to be, is that correct?
Where the natural areas were going to be and what we're going to do with the spaces,
yeah,
in between buildings.
Right. So then that gave you, on a day-to-day basis, the ability to, as you said, to plat the land.
Right.
As you moved, with your experience at on Reeder Farm, as you then moved across to the Charmony farm development, did you increase the size of the plats?
No, I think we kept them about the same.
So one could.
But by that time, we were convinced that we weren't too far off the mark,
right,
and that you couldn't anticipate everything. You might need to combine certain lots, but that we were okay.
But if somebody wanted more space, they could just purchase another plot.
They could purchase another lot, yes.
Yeah,
right.
Lot adjacent.
Right.
Was that done in some cases?
Yeah, I think perhaps Ultratech up there on the hill probably ranges over a couple of lots at least.
You want to speak at all to the types of activities that go on in the park? Terms of what businesses, where, and how they've adjusted to their.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm in particularly good, because you know my relationship has not necessarily been with the people who,
yeah,
have located in the park, except as they came and put forward proposals for what they were going to do physically.
Let's talk about the development of the staff then, when you were still active. Initially it was you and Wayne and Patty Spires-Merkel.
That was pretty much it.
That was the staff.
Yes, right. And then when the marketing got a little more, needed more manpower, mm-hmm, Greg Heyer came on.
Okay. So it's amazing when you look at it that this extraordinarily small staff would develop this major complex. obviously, you had a good working relationship between all of you. Is that?
I found my years there, which were from 1981 or 82 or 84, maybe as full time,
yeah,
to my retirement in 99, to be just very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Now, once you got over here on the Charmony farm, were there any changes in what you needed to take into consideration, any special developments? Because we're talking about a period roughly initially 10 years with the Reeder site and then subsequently the Charmony.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think by that time it was all pretty well in hand. This seems to me that there have been some slowdowns,
yeah,
over here.
Right.
There's still the properties on that corner, and in fact, there's some properties up there within the trees. that have been considered from time to time. But for whatever set of reasons, nobody's been found to develop those.
Now, wasn't part of that designed to deal with the water problem that you're talking about?
Well, what you see as a kind of a stepped terraced basin is another part of our response to the city's insistence that we have a storm retention area.
This is the the southwest corner of the Mineral Point Whitney Way intersection.
Exactly, right, right.
And approximately what space is devoted to that water retention?
That's probably a 3 or 4 or 5 acre
okay.
area. Yeah.
But you could develop
up above
Mineral
that,
Point.
Above that.
It would be along Mineral Point Road.
Along Mineral Point Road. And along the right-of-way of Gilbert Road, which is closed, but which exists up on top of that, overlooking that, there are one or two lots that could be developed. They're slightly more difficult lots to develop than some of the others, but they're very developable.
Have you been involved, or were you involved at all in thinking about the next phase of the research park, namely the west of the Beltline?
Not really. There was the efforts, I think, to pick up that property probably that was ongoing with the time that we were developing this. But there, I was never involved in any very detailed consideration of what that should be like.
Mm-hmm. From your own personal standpoint, what do you feel the greatest sense of accomplishment, besides the golf course, in terms of the development of the park? One can certainly look over the landscape and say, this is really miraculous that in a city that's growing and expanding the way it is, that we have this beautiful area, which it is.
Yes.
And you had a lot to do with it.
Well, I feel some satisfaction out of that fact, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And had good support from the both administrative people and the boards and committees that were involved to do what we wanted. I always remember going to one of the board meetings one time, and I had proposals for these stone gates that we have at the major entries.
Uh-huh.
And somebody thought that was a bit much.
Is that right?
And
a little too assertive on our
pretensions? Well, yes, just a little bit more than perhaps what the Madison and Wisconsin standard was.
Yeah.
And I always remember with great gratitude Donna Shalala's remark. She says, "I don't think we ought to eliminate these from the plan."
So cooler heads prevailed.
Cooler heads prevailed, right.
Well,
I didn't have to do hand-to-hand combat.
That
myself.
Was the biggest issue you faced. Things were pretty easy.
Yeah, we were
but
pretty good.
These are really markers, aren't they, in terms of, because there is no other discrete identity of the park, these really say, hey, this is where you are.
Right.
This is where you're going.
These are the signboards, which I think are relatively discreet and in good taste.
Yeah. Now, that's another concern that had evolved early. I think that was part of the zoning requirements, that the signage on buildings be of such a nature.
Yes, we've had very stringent limitations and requirements relative to signage. And
what were those specifically?
Well, there was a standard signboard that could be developed in a variety of ways. If it was a multi-tenant building or if it was a single-tenant building, obviously the sign read different ways, but those all had to come to the design review board for approval before they could be erected. We have one tenant in the park, which nobody seems to get to be able to get to, I won't mention names, but to abide by that. But from my perspective, it cheapens the look of the park considerably.
Is that readily prominent?
It's on the main drag over here.
Okay.
And they have a subtenant who insists that they must be recognized too. And I think there's a battle between the major
internal.
Yeah, internal, right. The internal guy doesn't want to share his major sign. with one of his subtenants, and the subtenants feel the need for prominent display. So aside from that, we've done pretty well in terms of limiting signage, I think.
Well, but as you indicated earlier, when you compare the time between deciding to do something and actually being able to do it in this environment versus what happens on campus, although that process has been accelerated in recent years, but the sort of diplomatic steps you had to go through on campus were much more onerous than the ones you had to
do. That's probably true. I didn't ever mind the campus steps.
Yeah.
It was the steps beyond that when one went to the state.
Oh, once you...
Yeah, so, right.
But the
right.
campus, because we did have the campus planning committee,
exactly.
which was the forum where
right.
these things would be resolved.
Right.
And of course, one of the problems over the years was once things left the campus planning committee, it would take forever
yes, right.
to get the building built. And when Donna Shalala came, she made some overtures downtown, which really were revolutionary in the sense that we were not bound by some of those
right.
things that you found bureaucratically oppressive.
Right.
And so we were able to move forward a lot more
yes.
rapidly
right.
than we do. And now we're on the brink of a whole new era of campus development. Can you imagine, I think you and I are from the same area, but can you imagine in our day the chance for proposing that we tear down a building that was less than 50 years old and start over again?
No, I can't.
Yeah.
The thing that I sometimes don't like to drive through the campus. Mm-hmm. I recall the months and months and months
of your blood that
of
you
my blood
spilled.
That was spilled
yeah.
over the crew house.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And finally, a deck was placed on top of the crew house so that one could continue to have some presence of the lake
yeah.
back in the
right.
campus. And now there is some gosh awful thing which has arisen out of the.
Yes, I was at one of the sessions that they had explaining the new plan. And this issue was brought up. If you take the extension of, let's see, it's Babcock Drive.
Yep.
And that used to be open so you could see the lake. Now
yes.
with the new crew house there, it's totally blocked.
Exactly, right.
And so you had spent a lot of time with the previous crew house, which was necessitated by the removal of the boathouse,
yeah, right.
Which was adjacent to the Red Gym. So you had to find a place for the crew house. And your concern was to preserve that.
Well, I think the campus over a period of time had blocked itself from
yeah.
the lake
yeah.
many, too many times.
Yeah.
And then I saw this terrible thing down there. I programmed my car not to drive me back
yeah.
down there.
Of course, in this day and age, you could rectify that by constructing a plasma screen on the side of the crew house, which would give you a view of the lake
right.
in real time.
I felt fortunate that I didn't have the opportunity to discuss that development with Dick Tipple, because he would have been torn
yeah, oh yes.
in about and rendered in various directions.
Our mutual dear friend Dick Tipple, who just passed away
right.
a couple months ago, who was the campus landscape
right.
architect,
right.
And worked very hard throughout his career.
Right. And I'm sure that he must have been over a barrel when it came to that, because
yeah.
his other love in life was
the crew.
The
yes,
crew.
Exactly. Yeah, Dick was a member of the crew and was my coach. I was a freshman.
Oh, is that right?
Rower.
Oh,
came
you didn't know that.
Coach. So he had that dual masters, those dual masters he was serving.
Right.
So. Are there other
things? Were you a Wisconsin boy when you came to the...
No, I came from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But my family's from Stoughton, so...
Oh, okay.
Any other things you want to say?
Yeah, I know.
I've got some... Let's start a new tape, just so...
Well, this isn't very long.
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
This is tape two of Art Hovey talking to Ed Hopkins on March 1st, 2005. We're still continuing our reminiscences for whatever they're worth. So there are some other things that you wanted to say, Ed, about your career.
Well, my other step toward the direction of being progressive was I was an advocate at one time for the development of green buildings in the park. Mm-hmm. My friends out around Chicago were very excited about that. You know, buildings that were environmentally sustainable and... Mm-hmm.
What would that involve?
Well, that would involve very selective use of materials and forms of...
Energy efficiency.
Energy efficiencies and placement of the building to maximize sunlight as a part of all of that, and a whole variety of things. And it was told that if these things were so great, why wasn't everybody doing it?
Yeah.
So I...
What was your response to that?
Well, I'm not sure that I recall or should recall.
Yeah.
But... So we did.
You're so smart, why aren't you rich?
we did the things relative to stormwater, reintroducing it to the subsoil, but we weren't able to win on that one. But I notice now in the newspaper, people are building those buildings and they're building them sort of as a matter of course.
Yeah.
I was just a few years too early.
Now we're... Was the technology not as sophisticated, perhaps, as it...
No, I think the technology was there, because all of the technology isn't that highfalutin.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that that wasn't the way that builders were building buildings, and they weren't prepared or hadn't been forced to learn something new.
Now I suppose it's a major economic concern.
Certainly.
Operational stuff.
Right. So all of these buildings here could be green and sustainable and environmentally pure, but somebody else can fight that battle.
Well, looking around, just perhaps from a philosophical standpoint, do you have any thoughts about how long these buildings are going to be here? I suppose that's dictated by what goes on here. More
than anything. Right. No, I don't, you know, I think these buildings were, I'm not saying that these buildings were deficient over the standards that existed.
Yeah.
I'm just saying they didn't do all the things they might have done at that point in time, because that wasn't the standard of building that was known to the profession and the industry.
And it wasn't widely utilized.
Right, and it hadn't gotten great public support. Had it had that kind of public support, then people probably would have come to do it.
Are there any buildings currently here that you would think come reasonably close to what you were advocating initially?
Not really.
So these are all old style buildings.
These are all old style buildings. Yeah, they probably, some of them do some of those things.
Yeah.
But,
well, let's go back. Is there anything else that you want to say about the research park and your role in it?
Just that the lessons of the research park should be analyzed and placed in the lessons of building the campus.
Yeah.
that whole system is just so onerous.
Well, that's where I wanted to get back to. Now we can, let's say, turn around and go back to the first few years of your...
I'm not sure you and I would be having this interview if I had spent, because, you know, I was with the Research Park for another 18 years after I sort of left the campus.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I could have stood another 18 years fighting
those
battles.
let's talk about those as long as we have you here, and because that's an important concern. Certainly, we were bound by all of these restrictions.
Well, there wasn't going to be any money unless you did it their way.
People don't understand that, but I think it's an important point to make. So why don't you suggest some of the areas that were of major concern to you in terms of moving through a period of rapid and extensive development, really?
Well, I, you know,
if you look at the 60s, that was a major boom time.
That was a major boom time. And that was probably before some of these other things that I've tried to propose and talk about were quite ready for absorption. It just takes time, I guess, in retrospect, for techniques and methodology, et cetera, to catch up with what is the current thing.
Well, some of this
being impatient and mortal, I didn't sometimes have the patience that it required.
Well, some of this had to do with the evolution of state government.
Yes.
In terms of staffing various areas, in terms of the control and the money that was being spent, although we had a lot of money in the 60s, did we not, coming from the federal government, which
I'm sure we did.
Was available to build a lot of these structures. And then, of course, the big project was the hospital and clinics. Were you involved in any of that?
I was involved with the site planning on that and the transportation planning. In fact, the sort of ring road.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there was some concern how to get all that traffic from the hospital back out to the main artery.
Yes. Yes.
And I proposed that we do that ring road, which would then give the most natural way of redistributing that traffic to the main arteries. And I guess I did, in a conceptual way, the site planning for most of that hospital.
But you also created a nice natural area there, and a recreational sports area, which it provides open and green space. And the natural area was literally the old University Bay, which had been used as a muck farm at one time by the College of Agriculture.
Right.
And so you converted that to a haven for muskrats. Interesting. You can mark the seasons by the muskrat huts you see there, and then I always, noontime, we always run along the lakeshore path there, and our way of measuring the seasons is the coming and going of the coots. There's an armada of coots that comes in the spring, and that tells you that
the spring is
here.
Okay, good.
And then they show up again in the fall, and that means that winter's not too far behind. And there's a lot of area, there's a lot of efforts now to look after the Picnic Point area
and
make sure that's an appropriate natural area.
Right.
Then is,
well, I think the environmental consciousness has increased fairly drastically during the course of my career.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't increase as quickly as you would like, but that's just part of the human condition.
And the new plan, which is being worked on currently, expresses a concern about making sure that rather than just throw buildings into various areas that you do have these open spaces on the campus.
Right.
A lot of that is the challenge of parking. When you were looking at buildings, you really didn't have much thought about parking because nobody wanted to put cars on the campus, did they, to speak of?
That's probably true. That's probably true.
So one of the things that you were always up against was, and this is when Jim Edsel was the director, is you couldn't get the buildings up fast enough, right?
Right.
This was through the 60s with the enrollment surge that we had and increase in research activity. It was just, hey, forget the niceties, let's just get it done.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think that's fair, yes. Right.
Who took over your responsibilities when you
shifted
to the research part? When you
Well, I guess probably Bob Hendricks sort of ascended to that.
Is he still there?
I think he's retired.
And what directors did you work under?
Well, I came here under Jim Edsel.
Jim Edsel attracted you.
And I think that by the time he was still in there when I was going full-time underway here. So I really worked for Jim Edsel only on the campus, right. And the succeeding group of directors, perhaps we ought to turn this off, many of us were not always inspired 24 hours a day.
Right.
But I'm not sure that the incline
well,
is upward.
Well, the record will show. Well, before we turn it off, let's, any other...
No, I think we've covered this fairly well.
Posterity that you
we could
see.
Just, we could just have the Kuna property back.
Yeah, well, I mean, that may evolve because they're having a lot of internal problems now.
Right.
So that's an interesting wrinkle, but there's a whole new world being born on the next research park, the leapfrog to west of the belt line. So
no, it'll be
that's
very
not a story you and I are going to tell.
No, that's right. That's right.
So our job is to tell the current story.
Right. And I've sort of assumed that perhaps continuity was important for me to remain on the review board while we were developing these properties.
Right.
But
now that review board will also be used for the new.
Well. Certainly that's a potential.
Yeah.
But I would see my time
now is
coming to an end and let somebody else do that out there.
But is the new site going to be restricted in the same way that is it subject to the same zoning requirements?
I think it would be subject to the same zoning requirements because those are imposed by the city.
Yeah.
It could have quite different deed restrictions. And much of what has happened here is because of the deed restrictions that we wrote, the research park. And I was the particular author of those that permit or do not permit certain kinds of development here within this development. And those could be vastly different out there.
Yeah. Well, let's quit while we're ahead and just congratulate you on the great job that you did. And we're sitting here looking out over your domain, and it's something that you can be proud of.
Well, I was always very glad that we came up from Illinois.
Yeah, okay.
University of Wisconsin is a fine, fine place.
Great.
And we haven't left very quickly after we retired.
Right.
Probably won't. And certainly not back to the flatlands.
No. Okay, Ed, well, thanks for
thank you, Art.
Chatting with me, and we'll duly memorialize you in our project.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Don't make me look too bad.